One of the subjects I've been covering for quite some time on this program is the deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization. That is quite literally the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground. That'll appear to be nuts to many listeners, particularly newer listeners, but sadly the documentation is there, and it can be found in, among other programs available from Spitfire, RFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, a miscellaneous archive show entitled Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, and numerous half-hour segments, including a pair of half-hour segments called Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, and also a pair of half-hour segments that are interviews with Peter Manning, the son of landmark journalist Paul Manning, the author of the definitive work on the Bormann Organization, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. That book was published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart and copyright 1981. To make a very long story very short, as World War II was drawing to a close, the Third Reich saw its defeat coming, and Martin Bormann, the genius behind Adolf Hitler and arguably the most important figure in the Third Reich and, in my opinion, the second half of the 20th century, set up 750 corporations in neutral countries, and in combination with the large German core corporations, they shipped all of the liquid capital out of Nazi Germany, stored it in these 750 corporations, which continued to thrive and do business on the international stage, and then when the Federal Republic of Germany was incorporated in 1955, that money, again, all of the liquid capital of Europe looted during the Second World War, as discussed in Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, that money then flowed back into the Federal Republic of Germany and was used to effect the, quote, German economic miracle, unquote, of the post-World War II years. Many listeners will no doubt find my discussion of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization to be ridiculous or preposterous. Suffice it to say that the Third Reich has perpetuated itself in a fashion not unlike the way the Mafia has. People can accept that the Mafia has perpetuated itself underground in a long-term and very effective and altogether deadly fashion and has maintained a very powerful presence on the world stage. Well, the Third Reich is a lot more powerful and a lot more deadly than the Mafia, and it has done the same thing. And the Mafia, by the way, is plenty powerful and plenty deadly. The Third Reich has perpetuated itself in a very similar fashion, and the core of that underground Reich that I've spoken about so often is the Bormann Organization. And again, the definitive text on that, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, hardcover edition, Lyle Stewart, copyright 1981. Paul Manning was part of the CBS News team that covered World War II for CBS News, along with Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite. And while covering World War II, he came across the story of the Nazi flight capital. Peter Manning, Paul Manning's son, has sent me some of the correspondence that Paul Manning had in the early 1980s with the heads of major news organizations, and I thought by way of fleshing out people's understanding of the Bormann Organization and perhaps by way of removing that from the twilight world of political understanding, with Peter's permission, I'm going to read some of Paul Manning's correspondence with major journalistic figures. This first letter is from Paul Manning to Drew Middleton of the New York Times. This is dated October 31st, 1981, and it reads, Dear Drew, I am most grateful for your interest in my book and for the inquiries you are making about its progress through the Sunday Times Book Review Department. It would be ideal if you reviewed it because it is of your era of history, too, and you could bring personal knowledge, experience, and understanding to it. All I ask of any reviewer is to play it straight without personal angles. The newsman who reviewed my book in the Sunday Press of Atlantic City did it professionally, and it came out fine and fair. On the other hand, the outside reviewer for the Los Angeles Times did an inept job and fell back into demonstrating his supposed knowledge of history, which must have been acquired mostly in libraries. My publisher suggested that I write a clarifying letter to the book editor of the Los Angeles Times, a copy of which I enclose for your information. By the way, time permitting, I will read that letter. Continuing, if I can receive proper exposure in the New York Times for the book, it is still my ambition actually to get to Bormann for a personal interview before he does die. He is 81 years old now. Bear in mind, this letter was written in 1981, the same year the book was published. Continuing, I have the connections to reach him, and Bormann's young associates might say yes this time. Even General Mueller, by the way, that's General Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo and the security director for the deadly Bormann Organization, by the way, beginning again, even General Mueller once said word he would like to talk to me. Mueller is also keeper of the Bormann archives. Both the Israeli Mossad and the spokesman for Simon Wiesenthal say Mueller has the best intelligence organization in the world. The second best is, of course, the Mossad. Alan Dulles told me, quote, "The Mossad is good because they are structurally sound and also can count on countless willing helpers in every land," unquote. The people in South America had once agreed that I could bring a three-man camera crew for a Borman interview. Unfortunately, some in the organization did not want waves. There should be less reluctance now on the part of the younger board members, unquote. By that I mean that with the book out, they should now cooperate because, like it or not, there will be waves. The camera crew would be from CBS News, inasmuch as they helped fund me while I was traveling and researching the book. If the New York Times News Service would like to syndicate a related news series at that time, it would be fine with me. At any rate, thanks for whatever you can do. And again, that was sent to Drew Middleton of the New York Times, who effectively did nothing. The next letter is from Paul Manning to Mr. Richard Levine, Vice President, East ABC Entertainment Division. And this is dated March 6, 1982. "Dear Mr. Levine, here is an addendum to my Martin Bormann Nazi in Exile material that was forwarded to you and to Mr. Thermopolis by Rune Arledge. This is a copy of a special feature Hearst will release Tuesday, March 9th, to their papers across the country. In Los Angeles, it will be carried by the Herald Examiner. In this byline article, I highlight the Bormann saga and how I became involved in the story. I go into some of the problems encountered tracking this leading Nazi. My role as the international investigative reporter of World War II and since may provide the central storyline, the essential link of World War II to the present, and the tracking of the, quote, world's most important accumulation of money power under one control in world history, unquote, as one banker told me." This last sentence again. "My role as the international investigative reporter of World War II and since may provide the central storyline, the essential link of World War II to the present, and the tracking of the, quote, world's most important accumulation of money power under one control in world history, unquote, as one banker told me." And again, the importance of the Bormann Organization is very accurately stated there. It's discussed in numerous broadcasts that I've talked about, including the aforementioned Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, and by the way, the post-World War II work on behalf of Heinrich Mueller for U.S. intelligence, discussed in a miscellaneous archive show entitled The Flight of the Wolf. Continuing. Jason Robards Jr. read Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and said he would like to play Paul Manning, provided a good screenplay is developed. He said it would be a fine follow-up to his role as Ben Bradley of the Washington Post in the Watergate film. I mention this only as an indication of professional interest. I own the copyright to my book, and have been approached by two independent producers recently who wanted to negotiate rights to it for a prime-time, three-hour television special that could be merchandised later as a theatrical film in Europe. The book is available at the Doubleday stores and at Scribner's on Fifth Avenue. However, I would rather deal directly with you and Mr. Thermopolis, by the way, that's Thomopoulos, and the ABC network than with independents. If this is of interest, I hope we can get together soon. Incidentally, Robin Moore, author and screenwriter of The French Connection, The Green Beret, etc., told my attorney he would like Broadway rights to it, for he had in mind a play based on the book. Sincerely yours, Paul Manning. That again, a letter to Mr. Richard Levine, Vice President East of ABC Entertainment Division, from March 6, 1982. The next letter, a section of which I read in a half-hour segment updating various stories, is to Mr. William Leonard, President, CBS News, and this is dated November 1, 1981. This letter reads, "Dear Bill, many thanks for your letter of October 21st regarding my book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. The reviews are beginning to come in, and I attach one. Both Scotty Reston and Drew Middleton have read the book and have spoken to key editors at the New York Times asking that it be given exposure in the book review section. Attached is a note from Drew, who said to me he would personally walk upstairs and see what he could do. Also that, quote, it is a really good book and a great slice of history which should receive proper attention, unquote. My book is a slow starter, but I believe it will soon take off. There is solid theatrical motion picture interest in it, and discussions are being held in Hollywood by my lawyer and my agent. Last week on AM Chicago, I appeared for 30 minutes with Simon Wiesenthal's number one Nazi hunter, who acknowledged on the air with me that Bormann had surely made it out of Berlin to South America, and also agreed that the gray eminence of clandestine affairs was, and is, General Mueller of the Gestapo, who today, at 79, is security chief for the Bormann Organization, and whose title at present translated is, quote, Minister of the Interior in Exile for the Organization, unquote. By the way, General Mueller, according to information that I presented in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Flight of the Wolf, worked for U.S. intelligence after World War II. He also arranged for the escape of Adolf Hitler. That'll appear crazy, but the documentation appears quite sound. It was done by a London Times journalist, completely blacked out in the United States. Continuing. I last saw Heinrich Mueller in Tripoli, where I was tracing the Nazi connection. Mueller was having dinner in the Normandy Hotel with his staff, having been retained for $5 million by Colonel Muammar el-Qaddafi to set up a new intelligence service following the overthrow of King Idris in 1970. Since that time, every Libyan embassy and consulate in the world has security and intelligence provided by the men trained in those years by General Mueller. It was Mueller who discredited Ladislaus Farago back in 1973. The KGB is expert at disinformation, but Mueller and his group are far better at it. When I was in West Germany, talking with some SS veterans, separately, as always, of the Bormann Organization, I was told that Farago was in South America tracking the Bormann story. The particular man who had provided a safe house for Bormann in the 10 days after the Reichsleiter had escaped from the Führer bunker said to me, quote, But that is okay. General Mueller has plans for Farago. He is not going to have him killed. He will be discredited in the world press. Wait and see, unquote. One of Mueller's agents started supplying Farago with forged documents, then with a snapshot purporting to be of Bormann and an Argentine secret agent at the border of Chile. When it had been displayed in newspapers around the world, Mueller next had his agent go to the New York Times bureau chief in Buenos Aires and, quote, reveal, unquote, that the snapshot was of a high school teacher and a companion of his, the picture having been artfully posed against a recognizable school building. This disclosure and the false documents that Farago had trustingly taken did him in. The effect on journalism and on editors in general was more devastating than that on Farago himself. The search for the truth in this matter faltered, and the notion that Bormann had been long dead continued to be fostered by Willy Brandt, the CIA, and successive West German governments. I have been told that Mueller once explained, quote, The world is a chessboard, and editors are my pawns, unquote. Mueller has been finessing the news media everywhere for 36 years. By the way, in this country, the attack on Ladislaus Farago's credibility was led by Gerald Posner, who in recent years has endorsed the untenable theses that both James Earl Ray and Lee Harvey Oswald were the lone nut assassins of Martin Luther King and President Kennedy, respectively. Both of those contentions roundly and credibly disproved, despite Posner's advocacy of same. Continuing with this letter from Paul Manning to William Leonard, the president of CBS News from November 1, 1981. Consequently, I have been extremely careful in my research. My sources include the U.S. Treasury Department, the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, especially J. Edgar Hoover's files relating to Bormann and Nazis in South America, Deutsche Bank of Buenos Aires, the Argentina Secret Police Central Files, the National Archives in Washington, D.C., Captured Enemy Documents section, as well as conversations with more than 200 Germans and other Europeans who one way or another were on the scene, down through all sorts of Secret Service organizations, including MI6 in Britain and the Secret Intelligence Service of Britain's Foreign Ministry. An officer of the Galen Intelligence Group made his contribution, as did some in the Israeli Mossad, who know perfectly well that Bormann is in South America, and so have never closed their file on him. As stated in my acknowledgement, Alan Dulles checked out my notes and said I was on the right track and should keep going. On that Chicago television program, the Wiesenthal spokesman and I discussed the relative ratings of the world intelligence organizations. He put the Mueller people at the top of the list. I placed the Mossad second and ahead of every other spy organization except that of Mueller, which I certainly agree is undeniably tops. Would you ask Don Hewitt to read the book and consider it as a possible segment for 60 Minutes with me as the interviewee? As you may know, during the time you were in Washington, CBS News helped fund my research and travel on this book, so they have a small, in-house investment. The people in South America had at one time agreed to allow a three-man CBS camera crew and me to come for a Borman interview. Unfortunately, some in the organization interfered. The younger men who nowadays run things and are partly in charge of the 750 multinational corporations set up by Borman in 1944. With the book in fact out and on the market, there should be less reluctance. They might as well cooperate because there will be waves in any case. I am told Borman himself wants the interview to assure his place in history. With good wishes, and thanks again for your letter, sincerely, Paul Manning. That again from November 1st of 1981, sent to Mr. William Leonard, the president of CBS News. Peter Manning enclosed a review by Jerry Graber, G-R-A-B-E-R, who was the author of The Life and Times of Reinhard Heydrich, the former head of the Gestapo, or head of the Sicherheitsdienst, I should say, the SS intelligence service. He was assassinated by Czech partisans and British intelligence agents, and that assassination led to the liquidation of the Czech town of Lidice, one of the more famous of the Nazi massacres. This was a review, and a very bad one, and a very fallacious review, that was carried in the L.A. Times on October, I believe this is 25th of 1981. Again, Graber is G-R-A-B-E-R, and this review was entitled "An Imaginative Search for Martin Borman Stumbles Over Its Own Questionable Evidence." And I'm not going to read this review. It's fairly long, and also the printing here is not the best, because this is many generations of Xerox copies, and apparently sent by fax. But again, it's from the LA Times of October, I believe it's 25th of 1981. And again, the review is by Jerry Graber, entitled "An Imaginative Search for Martin Borman Stumbles Over Its Own Questionable Evidence." And in fact, it's the review and not the book that stumbles over its own questionable evidence, as Paul Manning gives ample documentation of in this long letter that I'm going to read. This is sent to Mr. Art Seidenbaum, S-E-I-D-E-N-B-A-U-M, books editor, Los Angeles Times, Times Mirror Square, Los Angeles, California, 90053. And this was sent to Mr. Seidenbaum on October 29th, 1981. "Dear Mr. Seidenbaum, in the review you printed on October 25th of my book, Martin Borman, Nazi in Exile, published by Lyle Stewart, your reviewer loaded his report with inaccuracies, to say the least. Commenting on the two principals, Borman and Heinrich Mueller, he remarked, quote, 'If the author had researched the personalities of Borman and Mueller as diligently as he has the complicated machinery of stock manipulation, he might have advanced his thesis with much more caution,' unquote. Mr. Graber asserted that my portrayal of Mueller as a general of the SS is not true, that, quote, 'Mueller started as a policeman and remained one,' unquote. Mueller, during the years of peace before World War II, was a policeman, but his position was inspector of detectives on the Munich police force." And then Paul Manning goes on to destroy Mr. Graber's criticism of his work. He writes, "When Reinhard Heydrich, who created Dachau and Auschwitz and other camps on orders of Goering and Himmler, first took charge of the state police force, the, quote, Gestapo, unquote, he recruited many police professionals, one of whom was Heinrich Mueller. During the war years, Mueller rose to the rank of SS chief group leader and highest general of the SS, SS Oberstgruppenführer and Leiter des Amt IV, Staatspolizei. This is not only a matter of recorded history, but also it was told to me with some thoroughness by the particular SS veteran who provided the safe house for Martin Borman during the 10 days following his escape from the Führer bunker the night of May 1st and 2nd, 1945. This fact of Mueller's position was confirmed by Hugh Trevor Roper, the Oxford Don who represented U.S. and British intelligence, and who reported his official findings in The Last Days of Hitler, which became a best-selling book some years ago. Trevor Roper refers to Mueller as, quote, Gruppenführer, head of the Gestapo, unquote. Politically speaking, Mueller perceived in 1942 that the man to be associated with was Martin Borman, who, with increasing power and effect, was in fact running Germany while Hitler ran the war. Mueller has been quoted, quote, Borman knew what he was doing and where he was going, unquote. From 1941 on, particularly after Rudolf Hess parachuted into Scotland to attempt to make arrangements with Great Britain so Hitler could have a free hand dealing with Russia, Mueller and Bormann worked as a team, Bormann managing the country's finances and planning its economic future, while Mueller, among other duties, charged himself with the security of the Reichsleiter, which remains his responsibility today in South America. His present title, translated, is Minister of the Interior in Exile for the Organization, unquote. Far from failing to research the personalities and lives of both men, I have been doing it for 10 years with diligence and with the help of countless personal contacts. My sources include the U.S. Treasury Department, the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, Deutsche Bank of Buenos Aires, the Argentina Secret Police, the National Archives in Washington, D.C., Captured Enemy Documents section, as well as conversations with more than 200 Germans and other Europeans who in one way or other were, quote, on the scene, unquote, from the presidential level in West Germany down to all sorts of Secret Service organizations, including MI6 in Britain and the Secret Intelligence Service of Britain's Foreign Ministry. Mr. Graeber wonders if I, quote, ever read the most illuminating correspondence between Bormann and his slightly dotty wife, Gerda, unquote. Of course I have, along with enormous quantities of far more pertinent material. The above-mentioned letters were generally written after midnight and reminded me of Ernest Hemingway's letters to various wives and friends. Okay, but dull. Read one, and you've read them all. But despite shallow and unstructured scribbling late at night, we cannot discount solid achievements by either man in their fields of expertise by day. How can you discount as an historical figure Bormann, who succeeded in escaping to South America and who became a close friend and financial advisor to Juan and Evita Perón when they ruled Argentina, especially when his escape was a remarkable climax to the accomplishment of establishing during the final months of World War II, when his country was, it was perfectly clear to him, losing 750 corporations in the neutral nations of the world, primed to receive the liquid wealth of Germany, and along with it, cadres of scientists, technicians, and administrators. These corporations, as I explained in great and accurate detail in my book, became bastions of economic assistance to West Germany in its climb back to world industrial and financial leadership. My book is a large picture of the climatic end to World War II. It deals not only with Bormann and Mueller, but also with Hitler, Winston Churchill, Joseph Stalin, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and others. I was there, on the scene, long before the United States got into the war, all during the entire period, living in London during the bombings, in France during the occupation, with the troops and the Air Force into Germany at the end, following Rommel's army in North Africa, and in war-torn and defeated Italy. I was, in fact, the one and only correspondent in the world to personally witness both surrender ceremonies, that of the Germans at Rennes and the Japanese on the USS Missouri in Tokyo Harbor. That, by the way, this is that French city is R-E-I-M-S. Continuing. I knew most of these figures and many more in my job as a U.S. newspaper bureau chief and as a CBS war correspondent and a colleague of Edward R. Murrow. In the Atlantic City Sunday Press, a more objective and somewhat better informed reviewer put it this way, quote, Manning documents his findings throughout, and each chapter seems more amazing than its predecessor. The book reveals a lot of double dealing among the Allies. As pages unfold, the reader is more convinced that the entire truths of the final days of World War II have never been told. Manning's book raises many questions, including how many more top Nazis are still living in splendor throughout the world, including America, enjoying their ill-gotten spoils. What is Martin Bormann doing today? Again, this letter written in October of 1981. He was 81 years old last June, is always addressed Führer, and lives on a 200,000-acre ranch on the Argentine Pampas. Hitler's priceless art collection, a, quote, treasure of the Third Reich, unquote, Bormann declares, decorates his living quarters, where he is protected by SS guards and the most sophisticated devices, making his abode attack-proof from both ground and air. A CIA contract pilot who flew South American routes says, quote, it could cost you your life to fly over the Bormann Ranch without proper identification codes, unquote. As for General Mueller, I saw him last in Tripoli where I was tracing the Nazi connection. Mueller was having dinner in the Normandy Hotel with his staff, having been retained for $5 million by Colonel El Gaddafi to set up a new intelligence service, following the overthrow of King Idris in 1970. Since that time, every Libyan embassy and consulate in the world has security and intelligence provided by men trained in those years by General Mueller. Last week on AM Chicago, the top-rated ABC TV program at that period and in that city, I appeared with Simon Wiesenthal's number one Nazi hunter, who acknowledged on the air with me that Bormann had made it out of Berlin to South America, and also agreed that the gray eminence of clandestine affairs was General Mueller, and always has been. What triggered my whole investigation, and established the authenticity of my beliefs regarding Bormann's flight capital program, was my study of the minutes of the meeting of August 10, 1944, at the Maison Rouge Hotel in Strasbourg, at which the future disposition of Germany's industrial and banking assets was planned. As stated in my book, these minutes are among many other documents and records I either hold or have been shown to me. It was this prescient meeting ordered by Bormann which put Germany on a post-war commercial profit-seeking track. Mr. Graeber seems not to get this most important fact. An unsolicited letter from Bill Leonard, president of CBS News, received a few days ago states, quote, "Dear Paul, the other night I read almost all of your book and I really did find it fascinating. In fact, some of the parts that did not deal with Martin Bormann were almost more interesting than the parts that did, including that extraordinary account of how the Germans were able to eavesdrop on the Churchill-Roosevelt telephone conversations and knew there would be no second front in 1943. Congratulations," unquote. Sincerely yours, Paul Manning. That again, from Paul Manning to Mr. Art Seidenbaum, the book's editor for the L.A. Times, that written on October 29th, 1981. And again, a tip of the hat to Paul Manning's son, Peter, who sent these to me. Bear in mind that the publisher of Lyle Stewart had his legs broken the week the book was published, and Paul Manning's son, Jerry, was murdered in retribution, the family believes, for the publication of this book, and the family has suffered very, very heavily. And it should also be noted that there was a virtual news blackout on this book, and that's one of the reasons why I read this correspondence. Awareness of the Bormann Organization remains a largely arcane and underground consideration, even though it is, in my opinion, a consummately important organization. I believe it will prove to be the decisive element in human affairs on this planet, failing a sea change in political affairs. And if that appears disturbing to many people, what they should do is get busy and try to change the future rather than complaining about my analysis of what I think is going to happen. The various tapes that I've done, including the two-part interview with Peter Manning, Paul Manning's son, the aforementioned Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, and the other programs I've alluded to, and also two pairs of half-hour segments talking about German control, German corporate control of American publishing, and behind that, the Bormann Organization, are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California. That's capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Once again, that's Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. Email address is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com.